This is the one with a headhunter.
And a sassy, good-looking female.
In addition to Lucy Miller.
Oh, and some Cybermen.
And the Time Lords being complete manipulative bastards.
It's called Human Resources.
Here we go.
Reviewing audiobooks now too, cause we love our Doctor Who.
Encountering we're in Tom Odawar, Dalek, Spacetime and Glam Rock.
Stylophones are awful, that's a TARDIS way. We're at Spunk and Merryskin.
That's Kane with a K.
Who back way? Reviewing all of who there is. Who back way?
Subscribe and rate on iTunes, please.
Audiobook by audiobook.
Even those that are godly good, we'll review them all you see. So join us on this odyssey.
It's Who Back When.
Who back when?
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to episode A006 of Who Back When, a Doctor Who podcast. I am Punkin, and I am joined, as always, with these fantabulous audiobook reviews by JD. How you doing, JD?
I'm fine, thank you. Hello.
Hello. Today, we are reviewing Human Resources, which, spoiler alert, holy crap, what a fantastic episode.
It's very well done. It's a two-parter, and you'll see over the course of this next 50 minutes, 60 minutes, 70 minutes of listening to this, precisely how much we do love this episode.
It's amazing. Do you want to maybe summarize in one or two lines what it is that you like about this, or would you say it's maybe best to leave that as a little bit of a surprise?
Lucy Miller.
Oh, that's it?
Okay, you want more? The fact that by the end of this episode, if you didn't like Sheridan Smith as Lucy Miller, you probably will do. Or there is no hope for you left.
How about, in addition to Lucy Miller, who is absolutely just bombastic in this story, how about in addition to that, you also include all the fantastic pop culture references, and the fact that this is probably the most That's What She Said dense story of Doctor Who so far.
Oh, yes. You know, this episode is well written. There are so many gags in it. Every single line is sparkling with humour of some sort or another. You have all of the plot threads from this season starting to come together. They don't completely come together, and that is quite deliberate because there's still a lot more Eighth Doctor adventures yet to go. This is, by the way, if you hadn't guessed, end of season one.
Oh, yeah, that's true. This is a season finale.
And it's well-deserved in its position.
Yeah, most definitely. I'm looking forward to your actor trivia tangents as well, because there are some fantastic ones in this one. Shall we jump into a bite-sized chunk of Who?
Okay, bite-sized chunk of Who.
Here we go.
So, Lucy, who was kidnapped at the end of the last episode...
Spoilers!
...wakes up in a corporate waiting room on her first day at the single most boring job in the world.
She has a vague recollection of her adventures with the Doc, but is, at this point, more or less convinced that she's gone completely bonkers and proceeds to do some very mundane date entry work.
Apart from that being her perfect day, the Doctor is visited by a fellow Time Lord who tells him where to find Lucy, which he does. But there's something very, very sinister afoot, and the Doc and his trusty companion decide to conduct some research on the topic.
It turns out that being a data entry clerk is really being an unwitting mercenary, and office politics in this case also entail ethnic cleansing.
Doesn't quite sound like my job, but guess who's going to save the day?
And that concludes this week's bite-sized chunk of Who. You're welcome, people. Okie dokie, do you want to start off the episode?
Lucy is asleep and basically is woken up by the headhunter, of course, played as always by Catriona Olsen, who gets quite a bit to do in this episode,
Yeah. Finally.
And, you know, she has coffee, they have a little chat, and it becomes clear that this is Lucy's first day at work.
Yeah, this is the job that she was talking about in the beginning of... Blood of the Daleks, that's what it was. Where she was saying, like, oh, she was just about to start her first day at work, but then she was whisked away and landed with the Doctor. So this is it. She's back there.
Lucy's having a bit of a mental episode at this point. She's remembering bits of her life with the Doctor, but, you know, it comes and goes. And, oh, look, it's Hulbert Logistics. This is where I'm going to work. And, yes, I did have a job interview. And she then goes off. She's a bit confused, but she accepts everything that the headhunter's saying to her.
Yeah, and we cut back to the TARDIS, which I'm guessing is still in the outskirts of that beautiful garden party, where the Doctor is trying to work out this block, because as we learned way back when, the TARDIS will now only work when Lucy is inside of it. But then all of a sudden, someone enters the TARDIS, and who is this if not a fellow Time Lord?
Yes, rather pompously exclaiming that he is Straxus and has been sent by the High Council of the Time Lords. Basically, the Doctor asks for his ID papers at this point. He's not a very, very trusting Doctor.
No, he's not. And this Drax's character seems very shifty. I do not like him.
No, and, you know, Straxus is played by Nicholas Grace.
Yes, he is.
Now, Nicholas Grace, of course, has done a lot on television.
Among other things, Brideshead Revisited.
Amongst other things, Brideshead Revisited. His big cult TV claim to fame is that he played the Sheriff of Nottingham in TV series Robin of Sherwood. That was his sort of one of his big cult TV moments.
I didn't know that.
But he does have a Doctor Who connection.
What? No way. Okay.
It's only a small one. As part of the Doctor Who Confidential series, for 2 years they had a script competition where school children could write a script. The first one was called Good as Gold, and the second one was called Death is the Only Answer. Now, Death is the Only Answer, Nicholas Grace played the part of Albert Einstein.
Ooh.
So he has been in a Doctor Who minisode.
Oh, wow. I haven't seen these at all.
There's been quite a few minisodes that have been done. Normally, they're released on the DVD and Blu-ray releases, which can be bought from Amazon.co.uk or Play.com or your neighbourhood HMV. And... they go on as DVD extras, and there were some really, really good ones, and there's some really good ones with Amy Pond and River Song.
Okay.
So Straxus turns up.
Yes, he does.
And he is, you know, he's looking around the TARDIS and going, you've been trying to fix this. And he then turns around and barefaced admits he knows where Lucy is.
Yep, but he's not going to let the Doctor take the TARDIS to get her because he wants the Doctor to save her. He wants the Doctor to go pick her up and bring her back, and then basically she is to be taken care of by the Time Lords who put her on this witness protection scheme. But he doesn't necessarily trust the Doctor to just take his TARDIS, go and get her, and then come back. So instead, he's going to keep custody of the TARDIS, and he hands him a time ring.
Now, the time ring is a device which is used quite a lot in the Doctor Who books and audios, but it was actually only seen in two episodes of Doctor Who. The first being Genesis of the Daleks, and the second being the episode after it, Revenge of the Cybermen, where the Time Lords send the Doctor on a mission. So this is their, we want you to go and do something, but we're not giving you your TARDIS way of travel.
Interesting. Okay, hang on, I gotta ask a question. We now know that the Doctor stole the TARDIS. This is what at least I'd learned this only after the 2005 continuation. I didn't know about this before. But if he stole the TARDIS from the Time Lords, why would they ever consider giving it back in the first place?
You get a bit of the answer in the episode called The War Games, which is the last Troughton one.
Okay.
So I won't spoil that because that's
actually quite close.
Well, bear in mind, it's the last Troughton.
Yeah.
So not the last Hartnell. But what you eventually find out and is that the Doctor is useful to the Time Lords, and later on in the review of Human Resources, I'll explain why.
Ooh, I am looking forward to this.
So this is a trailer for the episode you're already listening to.
I know. So please, whatever you do, don't press stop just yet. Anyway, so the introduction of the time ring in this episode is hilarious. I didn't know about the time ring before, but basically the Doctor, he just goes like, well, that's not the nicest way to travel. Like, why would I wear this on my finger? And he even refers to it as like, it's a little bit too blingy for my taste.
You see it in Genesis of the Daleks. It's not so much a ring. It's like a big bracelet.
Oh, okay.
It is really bling.
Oh, really?
You know, yes. It's not a small little ring, which you could probably cover up with like a glove. It's a huge fuck off bracelet. You wouldn't be seen dead. Lucy Miller wouldn't be seen dead with it, and she shops at Primark.
Okay, all right. Anyway, let's cut back to Hulbert Logistics, where Lucy is being introduced to the team, basically. She meets someone named Karen, who sits opposite her in this office, and it turns out Karen and Lucy have actually met once before. They were interviewed for this job on the same day, but both were found to be very good candidates, and thus both were hired.
And they get on really well.
There's such a fantastic little pun sequence here.
And they basically do rope jokes for basically 2 minutes.
Yeah, exactly. And the headhunter goes like, yeah.
It's hilarious.
Can you show Lucy the ropes? Which she doesn't necessarily. She instead just, or both of them just have this fantastic rope joke banter session.
And then the headhunter toddles off.
Yeah.
Lucy is sat down with Karen and starts to do reports for the planning meeting this afternoon.
Yep. In the meantime, the headhunter calls the MD, Mr. Hulbert, and says, you know what? Yep. May not have been as quick a job as I anticipated to track down Lucy, but it turns out that she had been joined by a time traveler, and Hulbert is basically lucky to have hired a headhunter who is able to travel through space and time.
So, at this point, we're starting to get an idea that possibly Hulbert is not exactly your normal person.
Well, he's aware of time travel and space travel in general. Clearly, there is something very sinister afoot. That's also the first inclusion of sort of corporate lingo. Well, corporate, like office lingo. There is a lot of office lingo in this double feature. They're just talking about like, oh, well, I will be invoicing you. That's great. We'll process that invoice and you'll be paid within 3 working days or something like that. But this is just the tip of the iceberg. Stuff is going to go corporate mental in a bit, but in the best possible way.
Oh yeah, this is mocking of corporate structures, and it gets really crazy.
Yeah. Anyway,
Karen is played by Louise Fullerton, who has not done that much acting. She's been on a couple of things, and she was in 3 episodes of EastEnders, which to be fair gives her a good grounding for her character in this.
Yeah, fair enough. I looked her up on IMDb, didn't recognize, I think, well, practically anything that she'd been in. Does a good job though, I gotta say.
Yes. Oh no, she does a very good job. And the headhunter here is talking to Hulbert, who is this space-time understanding head of this logistics firm, and he's played by Roy Marsden. Now, Roy Marsden is one of these great British actors who have been in practically everything. He did a lot of 1980s crime dramas where he played Detective Adam Dalgliesh. He has a Doctor Who connection.
Oh, bingo! Okay, let's hear it.
He played Mr. Stoker, who is the head of the hospital that Martha Jones is working in her first episode, Smith and Jones.
Oh, you don't say. Okay, screenshot on the website, people.
So.
Okay, so anyway.
We head back to Karen and Lucy.
Yeah, and Lucy is basically, she wants to get a little bit of fresh air in the office because it's very stuffy, but is unable to open the windows. Karen just finds this very strange, but Lucy basically goes, okay, check it out. You're telling me it's going to get very, very stressful. We're going to have a lot of work to do, but I need a bit of fresh air. So she's going to pop out. She says, if anyone else, just tell them that I need a smoke break. And she leaves, at which point, kablamo, her phone rings, Karen answers on her behalf, and oddly, someone has called for Lucy in particular.
That person obviously knows Lucy quite well, because the person on the end of the phone knows that Lucy doesn't smoke.
Mm-hmm.
But we follow Lucy out of the door, and she meets a security guard
in the corridor. Yeah, who grunts at her. Literally grunts at her. Soundbite?
Soundbite. Oh,
soundbite. I may actually keep that in.
Why do you need to soundbite it? I've just done it there for you.
Excuse me. Hello? Are you the security guy? Why are the doors locked? Oh, it's like that, is it?
Meanwhile, back at Karen's desk, Karen and her manager, the amazingly awful Jerry Cooper.
Who is... go for it.
Who is a complete caricature of anyone from the TV show The Office.
I was going to say, yes, he's... what's his name? Peter Brent?
David Brent.
David Brent.
You know, yeah, don't call me Mr. Cooper, call me Jerry.
Yeah, this is incredibly awkward small talk, the unintentional sexism. Anyway, Lucy comes back, not having been allowed access to the outdoors by the grunting security guard, whose name is Clive, by the way, and is now introduced to Jerry Cooper, who says that he is the head of operations for the Telford branch. And this is very surprising to Lucy because, well, we'll find out very shortly that she actually only got this job because she wanted to work in London, but now apparently she's working in Telford.
And Telford, for those people that don't know, is awful. So anyway, he pops off, and he's played by Owen Bremen. Unfortunately, there isn't a Doctor Who connection. There is a Doctor connection, in that he's currently starring in the TV show Doctors as Dr. Heston Carter, but he's never actually been in Doctor Who before.
No.
But he does a very good job of playing a sleazy manager.
He does.
In both shows, to be fair.
Oh, really? He is hilarious in this one. I love his character. Anyway, so, go for it.
Karen is now chatting back to Lucy again and explaining that one of the guys from upstairs has been looking for her because the PA had an accident doing some sort of martial arts and won't be in.
Yeah, she had a Tai Chi accident.
Is that even possible?
Yeah.
So Lucy is, or on her first day at work, seconded to be the PA to someone from planning.
Yeah.
So he's to go upstairs.
Yep. While she goes upstairs, we are also treated to the first of several, I guess, corporate-wide Tannoy messages. And in this case, actually, maybe we should soundbite this one as well, just to give people an impression of what these are like.
These are really good, definitely soundbite. Soundbite?
Soundbite.
Attention all personnel. Fresh sandwiches are now available from the vending machine in the staff lounge.
Oh, I heard a rumour they're bringing some crab paste sarnies today.
Bingo!
While this is going on, Lucy heads upstairs, and
she meets her new manager, at least interim manager, until they find a different PA. And guess who this person is? It is the Doctor.
The Doctor. The Doctor whizzes his sonic device.
Yeah, he reverse Men in Blacks Lucy. He literally just goes, look into this light, and she regains her memory.
And she says, you know, the Daleks, the Tomorrow Twins, Phobos, it all really happened. Well, we wish that Tomorrow's Twins and Phobos
Would you mind re-Men in Blacking the Tomorrow Twins out of my brain hole, please, Doctor? Anyway, so she's super, super chuffed that she isn't going mad. Everything actually happens. And she also tells him about the whole London Telford thing. This is where we find that out. But basically, the Doctor now goes, okay, so check this out. I arrived about an hour ago. I was going to find you sooner, but I ended up having to chat to some people and I had to fake saying that I worked here. So now I have my own office, a new suit, and here's my business card. And we get the first proper pop culture reference.
Which is,
when he describes his new business card, he describes it exactly in the manner of Patrick Bateman describing his business card in American Psycho.
I didn't realise that at the time, but now you mention it, yes, it is exactly the same as that.
He's like, oh, the colouring is bone, and the typeface is something called Cillian Rail.
And, you know, you get that. You've got, immediately after that, you've got references to The Wizard of Oz.
Yeah, exactly.
The Doctor has a really funny moment where he's trying to figure out which of the characters from The Wizard of Oz he actually is.
Yeah. He says something like, well, I don't think we're in Telford anymore.
And we're really not.
Anyway, so the Doctor has an appointment. He is meant to be present at this corporate meeting later on that afternoon. And instead of taking Lucy right back to the TARDIS using the time ring, they decide, you know what, something very shifty is going on here. Let's stick around. Let's find out what's happening. Let's find out why you were kidnapped and brainwashed into thinking you were in Telford. We can always go back later on.
So, the managing director, Mr. Hubbard, then gets a telephone call from Jerry. At this point, you see in the office that Hubbard is talking to someone, a client.
Yeah, a prospective client.
And the client is certainly not speaking human at this point.
Yeah, exactly. It's just growling at him, brandishing a scimitar, we learn. Interesting observation here is, there is no translation matrix. The guy is growling at Hulbert, and Hulbert is replying in English, and they... Well, actually, maybe there is a translation matrix, because they're understanding each other, but we are not privy to that. It's only through Hulbert's comebacks that we understand what this client is saying.
Yeah, this is just more and more that Hulbert is going to be the real big villain of the piece.
Yeah.
He is the one that is going to be behind all of this, and it's all his fault. And two episodes later, he will get his comeuppance.
Oh, this
is what you get from this one single scene.
Yeah,
as it happens, everything I've just said is quite wrong.
What? I don't know about that. What, are you trying to cover up the spoiler?
No. He doesn't end up as the big villain.
Okay, sure. Sorry, that is actually true. Oh, shit, spoiler alert. Anyway, back with Dr. and Lucy, they haven't quite separated separated yet, but we do learn, before they do separate, we learn that the Doctor also has been trying to open windows. In fact, he tried to smash one open with a fire extinguisher, which was impossible. He couldn't do it.
Again, Lucy comes back with one of her biting comments, and the Doctor shouts at her for, you know, using sarcasm for everything. And you get yet another set of wonderful quips from Lucy.
Oh, is this a letter one?
This is, "I am Sarcasmo, woman of sarcasm. My enemies are struck down by my barbs of steel." To be honest, it sounded like all of the pithy dialogue that was missing from Phobos has been put into this episode.
Yeah.
Or, you know, it's like when on a TV show they have bottle shows to save up budget. What Phobos did was save up all the good dialogue to put it in the two-parter at the end.
Yeah.
So the Doctor explains.
Wait, hang on. Have we missed? I think. Sorry. I don't mean to cut you off. I think we've missed a fantastic line from Lucy, because the Doctor's like, "Oh well, you're now my new PA. So here, take a letter, Miss Miller." And she goes, "I'll take four letters and make a word out of them if you're not careful."
That's in this same scene.
Oh, it is. Yeah, okay.
Yeah. It's the same scene. It's just one good dialogue after another. And you know, the Doctor asks a set of questions, which is, why is everyone here brainwashed? Why are they locked in the building? Why is this a temporal black spot? Is everyone against Lucy? And Lucy just turns around and goes, "Tune in next week to find out." And the Doctor and the doctor retorts quite nicely, stuff that, let's find out now. You could just do one soundbite after another and just replay the entire scene, because it is that glittering dialogue that we knew from Blood of the Daleks.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I should say, I mean, I don't know if anyone listening is afraid of spoilers at this point. If so far you've just been listening to our review, you haven't been listening to the audiobooks, this is one of those cases. So far I would say this is the prime candidate for an audiobook, where I would wholeheartedly recommend that you listen to the audiobook as well, not just our review, because it's awesome. It is so good. It's definitely my favorite one so far.
We've said you should listen to Blood of the Daleks. And we said you should really avoid Phobos.
Yes.
But no, you know, at this point, you just need to listen to the first like 20 minutes of this to get this sparkling, witty banter that Sheridan Smith and Paul McGann do. And this writing, it is unbelievable that the writer of this episode wrote what we believe is the worst episode of the audiobooks as well.
Wait, he did?
He wrote Phobos.
So
he did Phobos and this episode. This is what makes me think either the script editor did a wonderful job of polishing up human resources, or he was really unwell when he wrote Phobos and a little bit touched. So
anyway, check out this audiobook. Fantastic. All right, let's get back. Bada bing, they split up. Lucy goes back to her desk and Karen tells her she needs to start feeding in coordinates that they've just received. And Lucy, obviously a little bit, taken aback by this, like, what coordinates? What is this? Like, how is this the job? And yeah, Karen shows the ropes. In the meantime, the Doctor goes and attends his meeting. And this meeting is where, I guess it's sort of it's the middle management. They're all meeting up and it's a strategy meeting, and it's conducted using corporate strategy lingo, but they are discussing something very different.
Yeah, they're discussing enemies. They're discussing backup troops in cold storage.
Yeah.
And they want suggestions about how to deal with this and what strategy. And the Doctor at this point just thinks they're all nuts. And suggests, you know, maybe using a focused sonic wave.
Yeah, which would basically limit the amount of casualties. You wouldn't have to kill anyone. You could just take over the stronghold without killing anyone. But
the Doctor says it in such a way as to say, you are not going to understand a bloody word I say.
Yeah, but they do. They are totally aware of. They're like, oh yeah, we sometimes use these strategies. We have all that in our arsenal. And it is fantastic. But the way that this conversation is done is so cool. They're like, oh, so the Stoke office would prefer it if we didn't send in our troops and blah, blah, blah. They just want to keep down costs. And then someone pipes up in the back, like, oh, they're such stingy bastards. And everyone's just sort of laughing and cracking wise. Fantastic scene.
And we go straight from there over to, once more, Karen and Lucy, who are typing coordinates into the computer.
Yeah.
But Lucy doesn't have her password yet, and Karen enters her password into the system, and then Lucy experiences a little mental wobble.
Yeah, exactly. It's like she's experiencing several different things, different versions of what's going on at the moment, at the same time.
And that becomes very, very important later.
Yeah. Cut back to the meeting. Jerry, our favorite dude, Jerry, is talking to Doc, going like, "Dude, Meister, seriously, these ideas, spot on. Fantastic. We're going to touch base. We're going to do this, blah, blah. Let's make some time and meet up later on." And the doctor goes like, "Well, I can always make time."
But during this, they mention a fully charged plasma cannon.
Yep.
And the Reading branch. Now, like Telford...
Apologies to anyone living in either Telford or Reading.
I have friends that live in Reading.
Same here.
I'm so sorry for you. Lucy brings Karen a coffee.
Her phone rings again.
And you get yet more Doctor and Lucy chatting, and how Lucy puts on a very, very polite telephone voice. Yes, this is Lucy Miller.
Yeah.
And he says, "Come up to the office, need to talk."
Yep. Which she does. She opens the door only to find him shredding every piece of paper in sight. And she explains, yeah, she's just been entering some data, and it's all to do with, well, something with the Stoke branch. And he's like, "Oh, I was just in a meeting where we were working on something from the Stoke branch, but this wasn't, like, numbers and data entry. This was knocking out a military stronghold." Cut back.
Yeah, and this time we have Karen and Jerry arguing rather than having one of their cute little discussions.
Yeah.
And basically, Karen's been fired.
Yeah, and we learn this just as Lucy gets back to her desk, and she's like, "Wait, what? This is crazy. You can't just do that. You should sue these people." And we get another reference to Auntie Pat. She's like, "Oh, my Auntie Pat, she got £4,000 because of from the council after some hedge trimmer accident."
Oh, Auntie Pat.
Auntie Pat. But she also, in this little combo, says, "You can't fire her. She was basically just delayed in punching in the numbers because of me, because I'm new and she had to help me and whatnot." Big mistake, Lucy, because now it turns out she's fired as well.
So despite mentoring no-win, no-fee lawyers that are on during Richard and Judy, Clive, who is the security guard, turns up and basically drags them bodily to the door, which Lucy couldn't get out of before, and throws them out of the building.
Yeah, literally throws them out of the building.
But they land, and they realize, due to the purple sky,
yeah,
that they're not actually in Telford, especially...
Oh, when this is where the line gets in, yeah.
Especially when the Telford branch turns into a large robot with weapons and walks off.
Yeah. Yeah. Little did they know, they had been conducting the most boring data entry work in the world inside the bosom of Optimus Prime. And
oddly enough, I also visualized Optimus Prime when this happened. So
we now get so many "that's what she says." So many "that's what she says." And okay, I have a suggestion. Tell me if you want. I won't do this, and I'll cut out this little bit. I would very much like to basically live out my life up until, let's say, Saturday. It is now Thursday, ladies and gentlemen. And then Bill and Ted back to this point and supply my current present self with a montage of all the "that's what she says" of this episode.
Has someone put something in your cigarette?
I think that'd be great. Montage?
Montage?
Montage.
I've got poles to grease and oxes to grind, so I'll catch you ladies at a later date.
I can't really talk right now. I'm a bit tied up.
Stuff that.
Yeah, go on. I've not got much on. Oh, can I come?
Pair off and chew it over. I see where your head's at. I mean, we've worked with those sorts of tools before. Ah, yeah. We could even get manufacturing to knock us up a soundproof tube, slide it in. The clients will like that. Slick thinking.
Or come straight up if you like.
Have you got a tissue? I'm going to call a friend of mine. It's huge, isn't it? I can hardly get it all in. How's your head? It doesn't seem to have gone too deep.
Am I in the right place?
A big deal, right?
Rock solid.
Right, guys?
Just enjoy yourself.
She's
got herself a Saturday night special. Jinky.
Taxi riding in the front.
I'll do my best to pull you out of this.
Yeah, I'm in.
But it's like riding a bike. I'm doing it for fun.
Your machines do seem rather formidable, Halbert. No wonder you've been beating them.
Pardon first.
Just stick your oar in.
I've got a more serious issue downstairs, Doctor.
I can't really take anything else in right now.
That's what she said!
Lucy telephones the Doctor.
Okay, yeah, go for it.
And she explains that they're not actually in Telford because, and I quote, it's a dry jungle, the sky is purple, and it's cold, which is rather like Reading.
And she says not only can she see the office Optimus Priming away, she can see more offices Optimus Priming in the distance.
So she takes a picture on her mobile phone, so yeah. obviously an iPhone, not an old Nokia.
Yeah, and because, wait, hang on, sorry. Does this episode posit that Vodafone or Orange or whichever network she is with has carrier service in the alien world where she is currently located?
The Doctor earlier on whizzied her phone.
Oh my god, you are so right. All right.
So basically, she and Karen run away from the Optimus Primes.
Yeah.
And the Doctor goes to visit Jerry because at this point, he knows the game's up. So the Doctor wants to know why they fired Lucy. And basically, the Doctor says, well, she was my PA. You know, what am I going to do now?
Yeah.
So Jerry offers to get straight onto human resources as they bring all the new people in.
Yeah. And the Doc goes, well, don't you worry, I'll go down there myself, basically. Doc heads off.
And outside, Lucy and Karen go in between all the Optimus Primes.
And there's a spaceship trying to attack them, or at least like attacking the Optimus Primes.
Yeah, and Lucy's suggestion of basically find out whoever's winning and go and make friends with them is, you know, 100% Lucy at this point. You know, this is almost like, you know, the blood of the Dalek syndrome where she's running through a battlefield. So spacecraft arrives and then a hatch opens and a man with a gun fires at the spaceship.
Yep. And basically goes, hey, jump in this hatch with me, ladies. And they're like, hey, this guy's got a hatch. This is pretty cool. Let's check this out. Jump into his hatch, cut back to the Doctor arriving at human resources while we can only presume that they are having some weird post-apocalyptic threesome out in the desert, in the jungle, sorry. And human resources, totally empty, no one's around, and there's a locked door, obviously. So the Doctor starts sonic screwdriving the door, at which point Jerry turns up.
And he is really amazed by the sonic screwdriver, not because it's a sonic screwdriver, but because he doesn't have one.
Yeah, and the Doc's like, oh, don't worry about it. I think there are still some left in the supply cupboard, which at least momentarily pacifies Jerry.
Well, it is. It's like when someone in the office gets a new set of post-it notes, and you've got a set of post-it notes, you're three quarters of the way through, and they're a bit dog-eared at the ends, yeah, and you are so envious of that person with their new post-it notes and their new black biro, which hasn't got a chewed end. You have to go to the stationery cupboard and get a bigger set of post-it notes so you can be the one envied.
I see you and I basically work in the same office. Okay.
So anyway, he opens the door to a dimensional corridor.
Yeah. Jerry, by the way, has he gone to the cupboard or is he also staring at this corridor? I do not remember. Because if he is staring at this corridor, he certainly isn't saying anything.
I thought he went to the cupboard because he doesn't actually say anything. So I imagine he's gone to the cupboard to go and get a Sonic.
Okay, that makes sense. Anyway, so the Doctor jumps into the corridor and
arrives at the other side to meet Mr. Halbert.
Yeah, the MD. Who scans him with his Palm Pilots.
And you'd think he could at least upgrade to a BlackBerry or maybe an iPad Air. But no.
With
the Palm Pilot, he scans and finds out the Doctor's an alien. Which, as it turns out,
he is
really useful.
Yeah, because since he can now recognize the Doc as an alien, he assumes that he is a prospective client. And so they start chatting. Halbert is basically doing his sales spiel to him. And he's got one of my favorite lines in this one, actually. The line is something like, well, if someone travels across half of the galaxy to meet with you, they really don't want to meet up in Ipswich.
Like Reading and Stoke. We apologize to any listeners from Ipswich.
All right.
Meanwhile, at Two Girls, One Hatch. we find out that the guy's name is Malcolm.
I would so watch that, by the way.
Malcolm used to work in the building, and Malcolm is played by Andy Wisher.
Yep.
Who isn't an actor. He hasn't actually done that much himself, and he's done a few of these audio books, but this is it. But he does have a Doctor Who connection by blood.
Oh.
He is the son of Michael Wisher. Now, Michael Wisher was in an episode I've already mentioned today called Genesis of the Daleks, in which he plays the first, and some say the very best, Davros.
No way.
Yeah, so this is Andy Wisher, Michael Wisher's son.
Holy crap, that's awesome.
So young Davros is basically saying that, you know, he doesn't know how long he's been down here. Karen said, well, it's only been a couple of weeks, but Malcolm is saying that it's been a lot longer.
Yeah, in fact, we learned that he used to work at the office. He was basically the previous Jerry. Yeah, he was fired. Jerry was made the new manager. And when Malcolm was fired, just as the two girls, he was ejected from Optimus Prime and has since then been spending his days in Hatch.
But you do get yet another wonderful bit of office speak on the grounds that he is just so surprised that Jerry got promoted rather than Barbara, because, you know, Barbara, she was the one that should have been promoted, but Jerry was having his own little empires. So now having this conversation in the middle of an alien wasteland while Optimus Primes are everywhere.
Davros Jr., shut up! There is a freaking war going on and your office complex is shooting at robots. This is crazy. Okay.
Oh. Well, you find out here that we get the exposition that the staff inside the robo buildings, they're guiding the robots.
Yeah.
They are getting the robots to kill things.
So when they're punching in data, like coordinates, they are actually controlling fighting ships or plasma cannons or whatnot.
And you find out that, well, Karen thinks she goes home every night, but she can't remember actually going home. So they actually probably slept in the office. There's nutrients in the food. And he says that, you know, since he's got out of the building, he's been scavenging and living off the land. And he's met a few other people from Reading. Sorry. Yeah. James and Donna. But they went off a week ago and to look for some food, but he hasn't seen them. And then basically Malcolm says, right, since the office managers don't know what's going on either, it has to be the managing director. It has to be Todd Hulbert, who is responsible for all of this Optimus Priming.
Yeah.
Meanwhile,
the doc is still receiving a sales spiel from Mr. Hulbert, but not just a sales spiel. Hulbert is basically giving up every single one of his company secrets to the doctor, which is the weirdest sales pitch ever. He's like, oh, check this out. This is our unique sales point. This is how we run things. We brainwash our people. We kidnap people who want to work in London because most often they lose touch with their friends from back home anyway. And then we get them to maneuver these robots. Everything that Davros Jr. just said is confirmed by Mr. Hulbert. But also, on top of this, Hulbert starts talking about how the computers are wired, how the brainwashing is linked to certain chips and this and that. And it's like, dude, you don't know. Maybe the doctor's there as part of some huge industrial espionage conspiracy.
He's obviously a bit overexcited. So the doctor tries to convince him to go and blow up Gallifrey.
Yeah.
Which, to be fair, knowing what we actually know, is probably not too far from what the doctor wants most of the time anyway at this point in his life.
Yeah, Hulbert basically goes, well, that sounds great. However, all of my resources are currently engaged on Lonsys and will be so until the end of the month. The doc basically is super impressed by all of this.
You know, the doctor notices that there's some brainwashing stuff in the corner. All of this technology shouldn't be human. Yep. But Hulbert admits that it isn't. And he used to work in the office, but he managed to break his conditioning and he did a hostile takeover.
Yeah, seized control of the company from the lizard creature who used to run the show.
Meanwhile, downstairs, our favourite office manager, Jerry, is sitting in his office when, thank God for small mercies, the headhunter turns up to make things miserable for Jerry. And basically, we know that the headhunter is going to get a big fat bonus if Lucy Miller works out.
Yep.
And she's pissed off that Jerry's fired Lucy, because that means she's not going to get as much money. Well, she actually probably wants to shove a few things down Jerry's throat. Yep. But at the moment, she's going to try and track Lucy down.
Yep. Meanwhile, Doc and Luke and Hulbert
are having more of their little chat, which continues. But it appears that Hulbert is having a little party for his prospective clients. You know, they're finishing the job on Lonsys, and he wants a few more clients because, you know, they're going to have some free resources coming up. They have a viewing platform with watertight defences, and whenever you hear anyone say watertight, you should automatically think Titanic. glug, glug, glug. And the Doctor and Hulbert agree to go off to this function.
Yep.
So the Doctor and Hulbert travel through the portal, and the Doctor, say, you know, after having travelled by time ring, thinks anything is nice and pleasant at this point. Sadly, the Doctor looks out over Lonsys and doesn't really like it. He wants to know who actually wants this planet. So why Hulbert is actually doing this.
Yeah.
And Hulbert's got a very good point here, where it doesn't necessarily matter what the planet looks like, because it could be full of minerals, it could be full of things that are needed by a race that we don't know.
Yeah. Well, you're saying that the planet was in rubbles to begin with because of war, and now thanks to war, it is going to be repopulated, essentially.
Meanwhile, the headhunter phones Hulbert's office, but Hulbert's now gone to Lonsys.
Mm-hmm.
And she leaves a message on the answering machine, basically complaining about Jerry, and says that she's off to go and get Lucy.
Yeah, because you, Mr. Hulbert, hired the dumbest freaking idiot to run this tiny little shitty managerial position, and he has just gone and fired the greatest asset this rubbish company has ever been privileged enough to grace its fake hallways with. Blammo. Back
to Lonsys. Meanwhile, back on Lonsys, Hulbert is holding court,
yeah,
and explaining that it's a little bit of a get to know you, have a few canapes, have a few drinks, don't worry about the attacking force that is attacking the platform at the moment, because these are watertight defences. It's just a minor insurgency.
Because there's an explosion. People get a little bit riled up. They're like, wait, what? Hang on, what's going on? And he calms them down. He phones his security force and they're like, yeah, don't worry about it. It's a cool guy.
They send in Swindon and Telford to stop whatever's going on. And then there's another explosion, and Hulbert's a bit out of sorts when he finds out that the automatic defences have been lowered.
Yeah, from the inside. And the Doc basically goes, I can tell you exactly how that happened. I lowered them.
Because I want a level playing field.
Yeah, it's just not fair what you guys are doing. Like, this is just uncool, dude. At which point, we hear the approaching enemy forces who so far have been under attack by the Optimus Primes, and we recognize this sound as something very, very specific. It is a bunch of metallic, mechanical, military-style marching, and the Doctor just goes, oh, fuck, it's the Cybermen.
And Doctor Who fans at this point will realize that it's very, very early Cybermen.
Yeah.
So this is something really fucked up that the Doctor has done. End of part one.
Part two! Holy crap. Okay, so Hulbert's weirdo genocide gala has been infiltrated by these Cybermen dudes, and they are toting weapons, they are kicking ass and taking names.
They basically put the prisoners up against the wall and take all of the stuff, all of the weapons from them, take the Doctor's sonic screwdriver and time ring.
God damn it. Oh, and here we thought it would be a really easy thing for him to just whizzy bang back to the TARDIS, but nope.
Lucy is a bit pissed off that the Doctor's phone keeps going to voicemail. I know how she feels sometimes.
Yeah.
And she's explaining to the Doctor on the voicemail message that she, Malcolm, and Karen are in the middle of a battlefield and basically are really out of ideas.
Yeah.
But thank God the headhunter turns up.
Oh my God, it's going to turn into a foursome. I'm so excited.
And basically threatens Karen unless Lucy gives herself up.
Yeah, Lucy's basically... Lucy goes, okay, I don't care. I'm not coming with you. But fortunately for her, Davros Jr. has snuck up behind Senorita Headhunter and just bludgeons her. She is now unconscious. So
the bondage continues, and they tie up the headhunter.
I'm so done all right now.
The headhunter starts to come around and explains that basically her entire job currently is tracing Lucy.
Yeah.
We don't know how she does it, and we don't know why she's doing it, but this is what she does.
Well, is this not the point where she kind of says why Hulbert has focused so much on her? As in, well, when you disappeared, Hulbert figured, oh, maybe she was nabbed by one of his competitors, because apparently there are loads of Optimus Prime-esque Telford offices around in the galaxy, and because he was a little bit, I guess, iffy about the whole thing, where has she gone to? And he normally doesn't lose a client or a candidate. He engaged the headhunter in order to track her.
Yeah, because he doesn't want his mental brainwashing techniques found out, and, you know, doesn't want to lose good stuff.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, back at Cybermen headquarters, what we do is we get a conversation between the Doctor and the Cyber Leader at this point.
Yeah.
And the Doctor inadvertently reveals he knows about Cybermen and then backtracks. He mentions Telos and then backtracks.
Yeah, this is really weird to me, because the Cyber Leader is going, okay, so why have you invaded our homeworld of Lonsis? And Doc goes, wait, hang on, I thought you guys were from Telos. Dude, so did I. I thought they were from Telos. They've never heard of Telos.
Okay, it's a bite-sized chunk of cyber history time.
Nice. Oh, okay. That's
right. In the very first story that the Cybermen appeared, which was the last Hartnell episode called The Tenth Planet, their homeworld was a planet called Mondas. Mm-hmm. It was basically a mirror duplicate of Earth that was on the other side of the sun. It was a sister planet.
Yeah.
And Mondas was destroyed at the end of The Tenth Planet. Then the Cybermen moved to the planet Telos, which was a very, very cold planet. And they lived in hibernation, which you find out in Tube of the Cybermen. They basically had an awful lot of wars against humanity. They lose every single time. Then in Attack of the Cybermen, which was a Colin Baker episode, they lose Telos back to without there, the original owners of the planet. And frankly, at this point, despite being the number two villain in the Doctor Who universe, they're shit.
Okay.
So... what we know, therefore, from this conversation between the Doctor and the Cyber Leader, is this is set somewhere...
between Mondas and Telos.
Or
potentially this is a different faction of Cybermen who got separated from the rest, and they then relocated to Lonsis.
We know from Tomb of the Cybermen that they're already on Telos, quite dug in at this point. The voices of the Cybermen are definitely somewhere from this era.
Okay.
So it is more likely that they are a separate faction.
Mm.
But I will come back to that later on.
Oh, nice. Awesome. Awesome trivia tangent. Thank you. Okay. That's put everything nicely into context inside my brain hole. Okay, cool. So we get a little bit of Cyberman history from the Cyber Leader as well. And then he starts questioning Hulbert. Like, why are you attacking us? And he essentially goes, yeah, check this out. I'm a mercenary, and I'm really good at my job, so you should actually hire me yourselves.
And then we get a really good thing from the Cyber Leader, who asks Hulbert whether he places his survival over that of his species.
Yeah.
Hulbert turns around, who's a little weasel, and basically says, yes, I place my own survival over that of my species, and the Cyber Leader just goes, we don't bloody well need you then.
Yeah, because, hang on, check this out, people. This is the whole reason for that little discourse. I was about to say intercourse, that doesn't matter. This is the whole reason for it. Hulbert goes, sure, I get that you want to turn the dudes and dudettes in my Optimus Prime into Cybermen, but you're going to run out of dudes and dudettes pretty soon. I can get you straight to Earth. Wouldn't you like that? So he is literally giving up his entire homeworld, and then they have the little thing.
Yeah, he's a little shit. Really.
Yeah, he's a total shit.
Anyway, back at the Hatch of Pleasure, Headhunter has woken up, and basically she's being sarcastic at everyone. And Lucy now basically says, why the fuck are you after me? What makes me special? And then we get the entire thing about, well, Hulbert just doesn't want to lose you.
Yeah, sorry, I totally jumped the gun before. This is where that little bit about Hulbert thinking maybe it's a competitor or something comes in.
And then we get a gorgeous little conversation.
Oh my God, we need to soundbite this. Let's just set it up, though. Yeah, who is talking to whom? And then we need to soundbite the shit out of this. scene.
The cyber leader telephones Jerry, and it is as funny as you can imagine. So, shall we soundbite?
Sure, why not? Soundbites.
Soundbite.
Your controller is captive.
Who is this?
You will return here with your weapons lowered.
Kieran, is this you? Stop messing about and get back to work.
Who was that?
Kieran Seidula messing about, making his voice go, oh, like that. I bet he did it on the computer. I swear, that guy cracks me up.
I love that scene.
It is really good.
The cyber leader basically is just completely flummoxed by the situation.
So the cyber leader manages to get out of Weasel-Faced Hulbert, who actually hired them to go after the Cybermen. And Weasel-Faced Hulbert points out the aliens in the corner. The representatives of Shinks.
Yeah, Shinks are these traitors who are in no way hostile, have never committed any kind of war, any kind of atrocity, any kind of military action ever. So the Doctor goes, this is very strange. Like, this is muy, muy shifty. Should say also, because the cyber leader didn't manage to convince Jerry that he was anyone but Kieran, and God, do I want to meet Kieran, because he seems like such a fun guy if he is the kind of office guy who would do this sort of prank. Because he was unable to convince Jerry, now Mr. Hulbert is calling Jerry and corporate spieling him into sending the Telford office his way. Anyway, yeah, sorry. A little back and forth there. Sorry. Just because we forgot about that before. The Shinks in the corner, they're the bad guys.
Or good guys.
Yeah, according to Hulbert, they are the bad guys. They are the people who hired him to kill the Cybers.
And according to anyone listening to the audiobook, they are the good guys because they hired Hulbert to knock off all the Cybermen.
Yeah, Cyber Leader, obviously not pleased with this. What does he do?
I don't know. What does he do?
He orders the Shinks to just be completely slaughtered in front of everyone. The gala turns into a bloodbath. And these Shinks, they sound so cute. Like, they're just these tiny little things I'm picturing. These tiny little guys who kind of trade beads and whatever. And now they're being ripped to shreds by giant robotic monsters. And everyone else is just enjoying olives and, I don't know, Emmentaler cheese.
And the leftover cucumber sandwiches from the garden party in No More Lies. Meanwhile, at the Pleasure Hatch.
Yeah.
Lucy realizes that Optimus Prime is probably quite a way away now. So therefore, the headhunter must have her own mode of transport. Unfortunately, it's the equivalent of a smart car.
Yeah.
It has one seat, and then the three of them, so Malcolm, Lucy Miller, and Karen, are all squished up in the back.
Yeah, at this point, they've had plenty of practice of being squished together, if you get my drift. So they're not totally averse to the idea. Headhunter goes, buckle up, everyone. Where we're going, we don't need roads. And they power off towards the Optimus.
Meanwhile, on Earth, our friendly neighborhood Time Lord, who we didn't expect to turn back up until the end of the episode, basically has a small conversation with some other Time Lord engineer that is there.
Yeah, or engineers even, like plural.
And
they're there to like fix the TARDIS, basically. Yeah, to remove the blockage or whatever it was.
And basically, they're trying to say, Doctor's not come back, are you going to go after him? And Strax has turned around and basically goes, no. Back on the viewing platform.
Yeah, the cyber leader is chit-chatting with Mr. Hulbert and goes, all right, there's clearly this massive gap in your security system that you disregarded, because here we are, so now you need to fix this. And we get one of the That's What She Said that we listened to earlier on in this beautiful episode of Who Back When, namely the penetration of the platform. Hulbert goes, don't worry, guys, this is never going to happen again because, and he points out off-frame or off-screen, it was all that guy is doing, Doc over there. And then he realizes, something's kind of off here, because where is the Doctor? Where is he? He's calling Lucy.
Yeah, they're chit-chatting on the phone, and basically then Lucy realizes that Hulbert's not in the office, so they decide they're going to go and recapture Optimus Prime.
Yeah.
So the cyber leader says, you know, how did we not detect your device? And the Doctor...
this is it. Yeah.
The Doctor quips that his mobile is shielded from alien com scams, and yet still gives him 50 off-peak minutes a day free. He's obviously not on Vodafone.
Nope.
I love you, Vodafone. Please give me 3 minutes.
I'm on Vodafone. I hate it. Anyway, This episode of Who Back When, not brought to you by Vodafone. All right, yeah, let's keep shooting down prospective sponsors. All right, so Hulbert now understands that the Doctor is the time traveler that he earlier on learned from the headhunter was the person who somehow joined forces with Lucy. So now he's thinking, well, whom are you working for, Doc?
He's given a task.
Wait, the cyber leader kind of recognizes something here as well. Because when Hulbert goes, you are a Time Lord, or you are a time traveler, the cyber leader goes, wait, hang on, Doctor, time traveler, these two things put together match up with something in our records. And then he starts recalling all these occasions on which, I guess, pre-Mondas as well.
That
they encountered the Doctor. And they're like, oh, he's this guy who changes his appearance all the time because he doesn't want to be recognized by the Cybermen or other enemies.
And he mentions Mondas, the Earth Invasion Project, and Planet 14, which sets this episode after 10th Planet, Moonbase, and Invasion. So this is set somewhere towards the end of the Troughtons.
Oh, wow.
So because Planet 14 is mentioned in the Invasion, the Earth Invasion Project is Moonbase stroke Invasion, Mondas was destroyed in 10th Planet. So it's somewhere between those. Now, because the Cybermen don't know about Telos, they have to be a separate group from the ones that went to sleep on Telos. So they are probably another faction that escaped Mondas before it was destroyed.
Okay. Awesome.
Meanwhile, back in the smart car.
Yeah, we get a tiny little cutscene.
They're zooming off towards Telford.
Yeah, because they now realize that Telford, aka Optimus Prime, is heading towards the platform, the viewing platform and the Bloodbath Gala. So they now, and they know that is where the Doc is, so they need to get to Telford before it gets to Doc so that they can take it over and use it to rescue the Doc. Hope that all makes sense. If it doesn't make sense, rewind this podcast 15 seconds and listen to that again.
So, the Cybermen now know who the Doctor is.
Yeah.
They find out that the dimensional portal isn't working. The Doctor says, well, that one wasn't me. And then the Cyber Leader has just had enough of the Doctor being around and basically goes, delete him.
Yeah.
But then the Doctor says, I have a TARDIS. And we're reviewing all his tales. No, that's not right. The Doctor goes, I have a TARDIS. No, you can have my time machine.
Yeah, but it's still in Telford and you need me to get it to work. So don't kill me. They then go, all right, fine, so keep him alive. And he basically just, in a very Mr. Burns-esque manner, starts rolling his thumbs and thinking, hey, works every time.
Meanwhile, grunting Clive.
Yeah. How are you picturing Clive, by the way?
I'm picturing Clive as sort of a fat Simon Pegg.
Oh, wow.
With facial hair and the eyebrows of Peter Capaldi.
That's a stunning combination of attributes. I'm literally picturing the orangutan from that Clint Eastwood film where he gets his orangutan to go boxing, and I'm pretty sure that orangutan is named Clive.
Yes, it was. I can't remember. I think, is it for A Few Dollars More?
No, that's it. That's
Smoking the Bandit.
Yeah. Isn't that a Burt Reynolds film, Smoking the Bandit?
Do you know what? Right, I don't know, but I am actually going to Google.
Yeah, I'm to be it. Let's see if I can beat you to it.
Probably.
Oh shit, it was Clyde, not Clive.
It's Clyde, and it was Every Which Way But Loose.
Oh yeah, dang, nah, but you beat me. Alright.
And Any Which Way You Can. Yeah, so yeah. There we go. Right.
Okay.
Divergence! Anyway, the headhunter asks Clive to let her in, and then the TARDIS team arrive. Malcolm, at this point, turns around and says, yes, he always thought of Clive as a big person, but remembered him more human. Yeah. So obviously it's part of this perception filter.
Exactly.
Going. So anyway, the Doctor is sitting back and going, excellent. I sabotaged the gateway and no one knows. the cyber leader then starts asking questions.
Basically, the conundrum to the robots here is, well, if you are our enemy, one of our arch enemies, in fact, Doctor, why did you help us defeat the Telford office?
Which is, at this point, a really good question.
Yeah, it's a perfectly reasonable query, and the Doctor basically goes, well, I'm always on the side of the oppressed. However, at the time, I didn't realise that the oppressed in this case were the Cybermen, because guess what, guys? I totally think you guys deserve to be oppressed.
Which is quite undoctorly of him, because...
Well,
you know,
there are lots of things... Okay, hang on, wait. Mini tangent. The Doctor, back in the day, Tom Baker era, he had the chance to erase the Daleks from history, correct?
Genesis of the Daleks.
Bingo. But he chose not to, because he was against that. In this story, he very clearly says, I think to Straxus, all right, check this out. I get that this is all about erasing the Cybermen from existence, but the ends don't justify the means. Even though I agree with the ends, in this case, I cannot agree with this kidnapping and the brainwashing and all of that stuff. But he totally is on board for erasing the Cybermen.
And considering when this is set, these are the last remaining Cybermen from a planet which he, in his first life, had helped to destroy.
Yeah.
He basically put them into permanent cold storage in the tombs of the Cybermen. He has, at every turn, got rid of and destroyed them. It is one of the few times when he uses a gun is when Colin Baker goes literally all to Wong Fu and starts, shooting people and destroying the Cybermen with guns and everything in Attack of the Cybermen. And considering that they are so oppressed, they are the underdog, they have delusions of wanting to take over the galaxy. But one single Dalek could take out the entire cyber task force while multitasking playing Tetris. It is literally, they are that useless as an enemy. They, you know, they're the second enemy of Doctor Who. But frankly, they're really poor.
Yeah, they're mechanical bunnies on non-brand name batteries.
That's exactly the best way to describe them. So anyway...
Yeah, yeah. We're now back with Jerry. And this is a hilarious scene.
You know, to be honest, anything with Jerry and the Headhunter is actually hilarious in this episode.
Yeah. Jerry, obviously somewhat perturbed by the fact that people have jumped into or stormed into his office completely unannounced. Very surprised to see that his ex-manager, Malcolm, in cahoots with two chicks he literally just fired, basically just is locked in his cupboard by the Headhunter and starts banging on the cupboard door from the inside.
And whinging that, you know, that it is no excuse for locking me in the cupboard that it's Red Nose Day.
Oh, yeah.
So yet another pop culture reference there.
Yeah. And the Headhunter is talking to them. She's like, so this is how we need to do this. This is how we're going to take over that. This is how we're going to do this. And we hear Jerry banging on the door from the inside. And she stops mid-soliloquy just to go, if you don't stop that racket, I have a gun and I will kill you. We get a moment of silence. The banging abates. And then she continues as though nothing had happened. It is hilarious.
And basically now, Lucy is getting a bit suspicious of this entire thing, because wanting to know why the Headhunter, who has been chasing her through time and space, is being so helpful. And the Headhunter's rationale is perfectly logical, which is, well, Hulbert is now joined the other side, and frankly, she's in it for herself, so just remember how helpful I was when we get you all out of this, and, you know, take me in your time machine.
Yeah, exactly.
So... meanwhile, back at the platform of death, Hulbert notices the Doctor is really, really taking this repair thing slowly.
Yeah, and it turns out no one actually gives a damn, because there is another gateway in every single Optimus Prime, and the only reason he gave the Doctor this job in the first place was basically just to distract him so that the Doctor wouldn't try anything else. He would be too busy trying to sabotage the repair of this gateway.
Malcolm, back inside his office, starts talking to Kieran.
Oh, what a guy, that Kieran. He's such a trickster. Man, I love that guy.
And basically saying that, you know, Jerry's unwell, locked in the cupboard,
yeah,
and wants some heavy artillery. So they're getting ready to attack the platform.
Yeah.
And then we get a really good conversation between the platform of death and the Optimus Prime. and we get Hulbert talking to Malcolm. Turns round and goes, "Why is the Optimus Prime coming? What? Hold on. What, why is the Optimus Prime firing on the platform?
Yeah.
Stop it. Stop it. Malcolm. Malcolm. What are you doing
Malcolm.
There?
Bad Malcolm.
Bad Malcolm. I fired you, right? What are you doing here? Put Jerry back in charge." And basically, Lucy turns around and says, "Right, you give us the Doctor and we'll stop blowing you up."
Yeah, and then she hangs up on him.
Yeah, and she does this a lot. She's not taking any nonsense. She's had enough.
Yeah.
Hulbert now is having a word with the cyber leader and going, "Well, some of my employees are just a little bit pissed off that they didn't get the right sandwiches for lunch." The cyber leader gives us a rather important piece of information that they've tried to get inside the Optimus Prime and they can't. So how did Lucy and the TARDIS team and the headhunter get inside? They are starting to blame Hulbert.
Yeah, they clearly think that he is organizing some sort of retaliation against them, which is not the case.
No, and everyone here is confused at this point about what is going on. Meanwhile, back inside the office...
Oh, well, hang on. Before we go back to the office, we learn one tiny little thing, and that is that more Cybermen reinforcements are arriving. Like, there are more robot dudes turning up very shortly.
Yeah, robot dudes to fight robot dudes.
Yeah, that's true. Well, it's kind of a David and Goliath type situation, except Goliath is winning in this case. Anyway, so back in the office.
Back in the office, Lucy has another one of her...
brain wobbles.
Temporal anomalies.
Yeah.
And she describes it as being able to see the same moment from a lot of different perspectives.
Yeah.
And she says she can hear something like a TARDIS.
Yeah. So she follows the noise. It's somewhere under the floorboards. And she retrieves what is making this noise. And it's some kind of... well, it's a machine. It's a device of some description. And Karen's never seen it. Correct me if I'm wrong. Later on, we find out that the headhunter recognizes this machine.
She recognizes what the machine is when she hears what it's called.
Oh, I see. Okay.
She doesn't recognize what it looks like. It's okay.
So she's there as well. She sees the machine being retrieved by Lucy and basically goes, "I have no freaking idea what that thing is, but that's pretty cool."
So, meanwhile, on the platform of being destroyed, the cyber leader is still whinging at Hulbert. The Doctor comes up with this techno babble and says, "Well, they're hitting the low points of the energy backwash in the energy field."
Yeah.
Which is extremely difficult to do, and I have no idea how these people are doing it. And then the cyber ships arrive and start firing on Optimus Prime.
Yeah. Back in Optimus Prime, Lucy is going full Che Guevara. She is devising all these very elaborate... You know what? Okay, this is what the plan sounded like to me. It sounded a little bit like Luke Skywalker having to fire one tiny little whatever torpedo, sorry Star Wars fans, into the one single vent, because she goes, "Okay, so hang on, wait, we haven't lost the battle yet. Is there a weak point somewhere in the shields? Is it big enough to squeeze the headhunter's smart car in through?" And they're like, they're doing all these things. She basically orchestrates this fantastically elaborate, this very sort of detailed and scientifically accurate, militarily very sort of high level plot to attack the Cybermen. It's super advanced for a chick who shops at Primark. And where is all this knowledge coming from? How come she has the military? She's basically General Schwarzkopf in Optimus Prime.
Yes, she's good.
She's good. She's awesome. But she is no longer just some 19-year-old chick. She is like crazy advanced in terms of military strategy.
Which is probably why what happens in about 10 minutes, the Time Lords got wrong. Spoilers.
Oh, yeah.
So, the Doctor on the platform of death is basically saying, these Optimus Primes, they're really fucking good, these things.
Yeah, especially that Telford one. That is, like, an impressive piece of machinery. Just a cutscene.
Then we go to Lucy and the Headhunter in the smart car.
Oh, bingo.
Who, the Headhunter goes, "We can escape now." And Lucy goes, "Nah, I'm gonna get the Doctor."
Yeah.
So, meanwhile...
And also, she knows that the Cybermen would otherwise invade Earth, take over everyone, kill all of humanity. She kind of doesn't want that to happen, so she convinces them to stay put.
In the Optimus Prime, Malcolm and Karen are basically saying that, you know, the strike ships are coming in, they're attacking, they're going to destroy us, and there's absolutely no way at all that they can hit all of the cyber ships because they're in a blind spot.
Yeah, but if I'm not mistaken, Karen goes, listen, don't worry about it. Just do what you did all the time when you were working here, and we're going to make it through this. And they do, and we get this incredibly elaborate fight scene, this battle sequence, at the end of which the cyber ships, they're just completely blown to shit. And Malcolm is like, hey, cool, that kind of worked. Awesome.
Yeah, they shoot one. The second one dodges the shrapnel from the first one and blows up. And then the third one just gets destroyed.
Yeah.
and Malcolm is going, I fucking rock. I don't know how I did it, but I rock.
Immediately starts making out with Karen. The two of them find a copying machine that they can make love on. Everything is fine and dandy inside the Optimus Prime. Oh, well, okay, anyway, in the Optimus Prime in my head. So then, back with the Cybermen.
We get the sounds of gunfire, and then we get Emma Peel and the Headhunter just shoot, both saying that, no, I shot the Cyberman. No, I shot the Cyberman.
And nice reference.
They rescue the Doctor.
Yep.
And they get the time ring, and they all go back to the Optimus Prime.
Yep. Still on the platform, Hulbert is a little bit taken aback seeing the Telford office slowly but surely absconding, and learns from the Cyber Leader that the Doctor has been rescued. His plan to switch sides hasn't really worked out very well.
And the Cyber Leader says, we shall gather all of our forces, and we shall take Telford. Back at Telford.
Yeah.
Lucy is quite happily showing the Doctor her device that hums like a TARDIS.
He pretty much immediately goes, all right, well, I know exactly what that is. That is a quantum crystallizer.
What the machine does is that it takes timelines, splits them, decides which of those timelines is the best for the situation it has been programmed to,
and picks collapses
all the probabilities to make sure that that timeline happens and lets all the rest of them go away.
I couldn't have said it better myself.
Then we start getting the revelations after revelations, because this episode is not really about the Cybermen.
No, and it's not really about Telford either. The Headhunter, should point out, she says, well, this is significantly more advanced, technologically more advanced than anything that Telford or Hulbert Logistics owns. This is Time Lord technology. This is Gallifreyan technology.
The Doctor, in one of his very, very rare, obviously pissed off moments, abandons the battle, grabs the time ring, tells Lucy to hang on, and leaves.
Yeah, they go back to the cucumber sandwiches. Mid-episode,
he has gone.
See you guys, I'll be right back. I'll bring your sandwich.
We get a cutscene of the Cybermen starting to take over Telford.
Yeah.
Because the quantum crystallizer has gone with Lucy and the Doc.
Yeah, so now the Telford office is no longer as successful in battling the Cybermen as it has hitherto been. Bingo.
Back at the TARDIS.
Yeah, Doc and Lucy, they materialize in the TARDIS, where they are greeted by Mr. Straxus. He is now made to answer for the presence of a quantum crystallizer in the Telford office.
And we get a small bit of Doctor Who lore here. He explains that it was installed in Telford by the Celestial Intervention Agency,
yeah, by the CIA. Yeah.
Now,
they should have found an agency within the Gallifreyan government that could be abbreviated to the acronym NSA.
The CIA were invented many years before anyone in Britain would have known what the NSA was.
That is true.
And the CIA were mentioned once before on television, which was in the episode The Deadly Assassin. The Deadly Assassin, the Doctor's back on Gallifrey, and it was written into the episode, the CIA, as an explanation about why the Time Lords, they're meant to be this very hands-off, aloof, we are not interfering people.
Yeah, they've got the Prime Directive.
But yet, they interfere every 35 seconds.
Yeah.
So they wrote in about this group of Time Lords called the CIA who do intervene. And they retroactively made three Doctors, Colin in Space, Terror of the Autons, Curse of Peladon, the Mutants, and Genesis of the Daleks, all CIA missions that they sent the Doctor on.
I'm so hard right now. I don't even know how to put it into words. That is awesome trivia.
The Doctor is pissed off.
Sorry if I just made you uncomfortable.
I'm just trying to do a podcast, you know. It's like one of these days.
Yeah, sorry. Go for it. The Doctor.
I've got no idea what I'm saying. why don't you do the next scene?
So, all right, fine. this was my plan all along. All right, so... Sonic Boner Alert. Okay, so Straxus basically goes, all right, fine, busted. The High Council had nothing to do with this. There is no temporal, what was it, witness protection program. There is no temporal black spot. This is all part of a conspiracy. And they planted the crystallizer in Telford in order to get Hulbert to win the war against the Cybermen. And the Doctor starts theorizing, well, you probably, in fact, have gone even further back than so. You probably made the, what were they called, the Shinks, really paranoid and got them eventually to hire Telford in the first place. So you have been intervening and doing so many terrible things, but why is Lucy in the middle of all of this? And then we find out the story of Lucy. Go for it, dude.
Straxus reveals that Lucy Miller is in fact one of the Celestial Intervention Agency's little side projects.
Yeah.
She is destined to become a powerful political leader.
Yeah.
Lucy just turns around and goes, you're talking about me?
Yeah. And it's not just like a political leader. She's destined to become like the next Mussolini or the next Hitler or something.
She will establish a massive right-wing European-wide regime. She will influence the interplanetary expansion, put it on an aggressive foothold, put it on this sort of warlike humanity. And Lucy's just going, are you talking about me? And neither. Lucy just turned around and goes, this is just ridiculous. Straxus is saying, well, the CIA have manipulated your entire life.
Yeah, we have been quantum crystallizing every aspect of your existence.
To make you exactly how we want you. We have removed all of your negative experiences so you do not turn into this Mussolini-like creature. And Lucy flips out.
Understandably so.
She's told she can't use a quantum crystallizer because she's already had too many time stream manipulations.
Yeah, so if she's in the proximity of one of these machines, it's actually incredibly dangerous to...
Lucy turns around to the Doctor and goes, is he for real? Doctor says, yes. And she goes crazy.
She goes freaking ape nuts. She takes a gun, snatches the device, she takes the quantum crystallizer from the Doctor, goes, Straxus, you piece of shit, we're now getting back in the TARDIS, and then they head back to the Telford office. At which point she runs off. Like, she just bails ASAP with the quantum crystallizer.
Yeah, we get a cute little scene with Straxus, who says quite smugly to Lucy that the gun won't work in the TARDIS because the ship is in a state of temporal grace.
Yeah.
The Doctor goes, hasn't been for years. This state of temporal grace thing is actually quite a bit of a running joke because in Hand of Fear, the TARDIS was said to be in a state of temporal grace, and that's why Eldred in that episode couldn't attack them in there. But in numerous occasions, Invasion of Time, Earthshock, Attack of the Cybermen, Visitation, things come in and shoot in the TARDIS. Happens with a Dalek in Parting of the Ways. Finally, in the Matt Smith episode, Let's Kill Hitler, the Doctor finally admits that this state of temporal grace is a load of bollocks he made up. Anyway, small tangent aside, Lucy lands in Telford and just heads off. Tells the Doctor and Straxus, right, get in your TARDIS, fuck off, I'm having no more to do with you.
Yeah.
Straxus is going nuts because if he's found here, there'll be political ramifications. The Doctor just is not caring about Straxus
He really wants to go after Lucy. He really wants to just, I guess, tell her that he's not like Straxus or anything like the CIA, in this case anyway. But unfortunately, he is distracted by the fact that Malcolm turns out and kind of just goes, hey, guys, check that out. We are being boarded by Cybermen.
Who sadly killed Clive.
Oh, I know. Aw.
That's sad.
That poor orangutan ever do to anyone, except feature in two incredibly entertaining Clint Eastwood films, the names of which we had difficulties remembering.
I will remember Clive until the next episode. Lucy is Che Guevara-ing right to the headhunter.
Yeah.
The headhunter's still here. Lucy tells the headhunter the entire backstory of we learned 5 minutes ago.
Yeah.
That she's basically meant to be this dictator. Time Lords have been messing with her. And she realizes, I've got a quantum crystallizer. And the headhunter says, well, you've got that and you can do whatever the fuck you want.
Yeah.
If you want to make the Time Lord's life utter fucking miseries, guess what? You've got a quantum crystallizer.
Yeah, and you should hire me to work for you, and then we'll do it together.
And I would totally watch that TV show.
As would I.
So it's Cybermen versus office workers, which is going as well as you can imagine it would. So the Doctor, Weasel Straxus, and Davros Jr.,
yeah,
they join up with...
the better half of two girls.
And they all basically head up towards... the office.
Yeah, which is coincidentally where the Cybermen are heading as well. They would like to convince everyone else to join forces with them, but since everyone is still under the influence of this whole mind-washing whatever, that's not going to happen. Then we cut back to Lucy and the Headhunter. We get a little cutscene. How does this crystallizer work in the first place? And basically, the Headhunter does what every single IT character ever says. It's like... let's turn it off and turn it back on again. Or, like, let's press that button over there. Maybe we should press power. So they start tinkering with the machine.
In the HR department, which is where the gateway is that can send everyone back to Earth, they've barricaded it. They're all in there, and it's the last stand. But Karen, for an instant, splinters into multiple versions of herself, exactly as Lucy did before.
Yeah, and she doesn't notice this at all herself, but the Doc and what's-his-face, Straxus, they see it happening.
And then the Doctor realizes that not only is Straxus a little weasel, he's also stupid.
Utterly incompetent. They got it wrong.
They picked the wrong sarcastic female.
Yeah. So Karen, who makes just killer rope jokes, is going to be the Hitler of the galaxy. Well, would have been anyway.
Had they have not made her nice. So...
wait, hang on. Wish they didn't. They haven't been tampering with her time. She is destined to be the next Hitler.
Yeah, they are completely useless, the Time Lords, at this. When they try a medal, unless they're called the Doctor,
yeah,
or the Master, or the Monk...
oh, the Monk?
Spoilers.
Oh, nice. Oh my god, I'm so excited!
Unless they're called any of those three, they just really are useless at meddling.
Yeah.
So, Karen goes off with Straxus.
The Doctor goes, I'm gonna go and get Lucy. This is crazy. I'm going to go find her and tell her the good news.
So the Doctor arrives, basically puts his head around the door. Please don't kill me. Need to talk to Lucy.
Yeah.
Good news!
Yeah, good news, everybody.
He turns around and admits to Lucy that, well, the Time Lords are really shit at this, and they've not been meddling.
Yeah, it was Karen all along. The Headhunter is there to hear this happen, by the way. Important to the story. So then, I'm not sure why this happens. Rather, I don't remember why this happens. Straxus and Karen go to the TARDIS.
And that's mainly to keep Karen away from the quantum fluctuations, which are messing her up.
Oh, yeah, of course. That's why she's splintering.
Yeah. So people are separated, and then Hulbert dies.
Yeah.
And frankly, we don't care because he's the bad guy.
Yeah, he's killed by the Cybermen.
So the Doctor is basically trying to convince the Headhunter and Lucy that they don't want to use the quantum crystallizer because Time Lords aren't stupid. Now, this is in complete disagreement with what the Doctor's actual opinion is.
Yeah.
Anyway,
but he's right to a degree. He knows that there is more to this quantum crystallizer than meets the eye.
And then the Cybermen burst in.
Yeah.
They recognize the alien device that Lucy's got and says, right, I want that.
Yeah. The Doctor goes, yeah. Lucy goes, yeah, you're not having it. The Doctor goes, give it to me instead. She gives it to the Doctor, and the Doctor goes, hey, Cyberleader, here you go, and hands it over to the Cyberleader.
The Cyberleader, who is obviously by this point confused, just like the rest of us,
yeah,
says, okay, well, you've given it to me. Yeah,
thanks,
now why don't you tell me how to turn it on? And then the Doctor says, no. The Cybermen try and kill the Doctor, who is standing right in front of them.
Yeah. Thanks.
First of all, the weapons don't work. Then the weapons blow up. Then the Cybermen fall over. And then basically the Doctor turns around and goes, well, the Time Lords just manipulate everyone. And frankly, this has been programmed, so no matter what you do, the Cybermen lose.
Yeah, but it's also programmed in such a way that whoever wields the crystallizer is not going to survive. They're not going to make it out alive. So actually, it was very good that Lucy and company didn't hold on to this crystallizer. And in this case, I guess the optimal timeline was, well, two birds, one stone, kill the person wielding the crystallizer and the Cybermen, who coincidentally are the same person, at the same time.
So then the Doctor over the Tannoy basically says, surrender or I'm going to kill you all.
Yeah.
The Cybermen don't like this idea. They start killing all the hostages.
Yeah, and I guess the Doctor increases the range of this crystallizer. So it now encompasses all of Telford, and Cybermen are just dropping like flies.
By doing that, he burns out the crystallizer, yeah, and it stops working.
Yeah. So now the Headhunter is going, dude, I want that thing. I want that crystallizer. Give it to me. And the Doctor basically goes, yeah, that's fine, here, take it. Doesn't work anyway.
The Headhunter leaves. She's had enough. Hulbert's dead, no one's gonna pay her, so she heads off in her smart car. In the office, Straxus turns up, says, there's been a lot of fighting, I might have to regenerate.
Wait, no, the Doctor says he might have to regenerate. Yeah, okay, hang on, wait, maybe I'm confused, because there is definitely a little bit of an interlude where the Doctor says, in front of Lucy, holy crap, things are getting out of control, I may need to regenerate. And she goes, regenerate? And she goes, yeah, he goes, yeah, don't worry about it, I'll tell you later.
That was when Straxus turns up, because Straxus turns up and says, oh, there's been a whole lot of fighting, I might have to regenerate. Lucy goes, regenerate, what's that? And the Doctor says, I'll explain later.
Okay, sorry, my bad.
And then need to get rid of all the robotic offices. And Straxus says, well, these were set up by the CIA. And the Doctor just says, I'm doing this. Just move on.
Yeah.
And then he lets Jerry out of the cupboard, and...
Yeah, now basically Jerry and whoever else is around of the humans, they're now either going, like, being told to go straight to human resources so they can be transported straight back to Earth, or they're staying around to help survivors to clean up the place and then head back. So, essentially, this is now the happy ending.
But we get one more cutscene.
Yeah, the Headhunter. Dude, so take it away.
The smart car heads up into orbit. And then Karen wakes up.
Yeah, she is in the smart car.
She got a bit, you know, blasted by Cybermen, but the Headhunter says that she's heard some rather interesting things about Karen, and she has an opening for an assistant.
Do you want to spoil this for me? Are they going to turn up again?
Yes. This is not the end of Karen nor the Headhunter.
That is good news. Very good news.
So, meanwhile...
Back at the TARDIS, Lucy and the Doc are having a little bit of a chat, and says, all right, check it out. The Time Lord technicians, the engineers, they fixed the TARDIS. It now works even when you're not inside it. So, if you want to, you don't have to travel around with me anymore. Like, you can go home. But they have they're friends. They get along so well. Everything's nice. She now knows that he is nothing like Straxus or the CIA or the rest of the Time Lords. She wants to stay. And we have a very nice, this is the ending of the story. They just go, yeah, you know what? Go for it.
No. They want to now spend time together. They want to go off. They have a little bit of, you know, back and forth banter, how much they do actually like each other.
Yeah.
And where are we going to on our adventures next?
Yeah. Come back in series 2 to find out. And that is the end of Human Resources.
Next time we have another temporal strange thing when we visit London again. So that will be Dead London.
Nice.
Next time.
Yeah, I'm definitely looking forward to that.
So there's a definite follow-on to this. But
before we get on to that, we got some reviews, people. Who started off the last time?
I did.
You did.
So it's your turn.
Okie dokie. All right, I haven't prepped anything as per usual, so here we go. I love this story. So far, it is the most cinematic, in a way, of the audiobooks that I've encountered, anyway. Of the Eighth Doctor Adventures, it is the most cinematic. Everything is also so incredibly vividly described that I had no problem visualizing everything that was going on. And even though on previous occasions we've encountered scenes that were just visually stunning, or you could imagine them on TV being visually stunning, like the Tom Ottawax in the Vortex, or the Doctor riding around on, I can't remember what it was called, a Vortex also that this is on a whole other level. You have huge robots. You've got Cybermen. And we know the Cybermen. They are a classic enemy of the Doctor. That already bumps this up a significant amount of decimals. The acting is fantastic. The Doctor is great. He is actually back, properly back. We had a lot of him in No More Lies, I suppose, but nowhere near as much as we do now. This is essentially the opposite of Phobos. Every character matters. The plot is great. We got tons of twists and turns, and it is even more elaborate than many of the TV episodes. I love this story. Technically, well-crafted, well-written, Foley's fantastic. Love every tiny little bit of this, and it's such a nice closer to Series 1. We get some closure on the whole Lucy Miller story. We know now what it was all about. And now that we've gotten all that, we can move on and just enjoy sort of the tabula rasa of characters that we love seeing together or hearing together, namely Lucy and the Doctor. So, all that being said, plus the That's What She Said density that reaches incredible peaks, and the sonic boners, and the pop culture references, I'm going to have to give Human Resources a 4.7. I'm giving this a 4.7.
I will, just for reference, copy across what I gave this.
Oh, no way!
We actually do these beforehand, so we don't actually see each other's scores, even though the last few have been identical. Probably given away what I think about this episode.
Yeah.
But this beats Blood of the Daleks, which has been so far my favourite Eighth Doctor Adventures. It moves along at an amazingly fast pace. Every time you think you know what's going on, something else happens. The first episode around, you know, giant robots destroying a planet, that could have been an episode self-contained on its own. Then they add the Cybermen. Then they add the Headhunter. Then they add the Quantum Crystallizer. Then they add the Mystery of Lucy Miller to it. The guest cast are good. We finally get a decent amount of Catriona Olsen as the Headhunter. Mm. Brilliantly, brilliantly portrayed, considering that for the rest of the episode, she's only appeared for like 2 minutes at the end. Lucy is on absolutely amazing form. The Doctor is on amazing form. But, you know, if you look at the disc for this, it's a picture of a Cyberman. But this is not a Cyberman story. The Cybermen are in it, but this is the story of Lucy Miller. And it is the story of closing this first of her plot lines. And this isn't the last time we've seen Karen. This isn't the last time we've seen the Headhunter. And believe it or not, this is not even the best Lucy Miller story that we will have. But it's way up there. I cannot, on all good conscience, give this a 5 out of 5, even though it is a spectacularly well-crafted episode. I can't. Mainly because I have heard the 5 out of 5 from the Eighth Doctor Adventures. And there is a story out there which is better than this.
Wow.
And I am giving this a 4.7 out of 5. It is a brilliant episode. The reason I am not marking it as a 5 is not because there are flaws in this episode, because there isn't. It is because there is better to come.
Yeah, nice. Well, we are in perfect agreement. I only wish I could hear more of your thoughts or read more of your thoughts in sort of nicely digestible bite-sized chunks of text. Oh, wait, I can! And so can you, ladies and gentlemen. You need to follow this man on Twitter. He is at Marius Kane. That is Kane with a K. While you're at it, why don't you follow me? I'm at Punkin. You know how to spell that. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/whobackwhen, all in one word. Check out the website, whobackwhen.com. We are constantly populating the visual creature and companion index. And you're going to find our mini reviews there. If you've listened to the audiobook and you've listened to this review, if you agree with anything we say, let us know. If we disagree with anything we say, let us know. Post it on the website and follow us on and subscribe to us on iTunes while you're at it. Next episode, what was it called again?
Dead London.
Holy shit. I cannot wait. So until next time, have you got a catchphrase yet? Do you want to sign off of some description?
Shamalama ding dong. No. Still with no catchphrase. See you next week.
Rock on, people. Thank you for listening. Ciao, ciao.
Back when.